D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. In case you missed it, Derek Mason attempted to murder a wasp while we were on the air.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Derek, you thought you and the wasp were done.
Yes. I thought I had accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. But just like Jason Voorhees, that damn wasp would not die.
It was a big one.
He would not be unalived, okay? So what I do is, I Willie, you saw me.
I saw it. It's good technique.
I grab it, bam.
And you had a towel.
Had a towel. Didn't do it with my bare hands, people.
Yeah.
I had a towel, nice thick one, so I grab it, boom. I didn't want to kill it and squish it. Gingerly walked it to the bathroom. Dumped the rag into the toilet, saw the wasp drop down into the toilet. I go to flush the toilet. That wasp understood what was happening, and he came after me. And I started running around like a little kid. I tried to close the bathroom door. He was too swift.
It's a mutant wasp.
Yeah. I think they had his bio. He ran a 4.3.
Mm.
So that's why he flew a 4.3. So that's how he got a bathroom. As I'm trying to, dart into the studio, he finds his way on the door. I can't come in the studio now because I'm afraid that if I open up the door, what's going to happen? He's going to slip in. We're going to be going through this over again. So I'm sitting there. He's looking at me. I'm looking at him. He darts at me. I move out the way, take the rag, spot. He falls to the ground, and I swear, no lie, Willie, y'all, listeners, he looked at me, and just flew right at me. I busted the door, closed it. I heard something hit the door. It could have been the wasp.
So you're saying that wasp
he may be still out
alive.
There. Yeah, he may still be out there.
It's on the grounds.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I feel for those who are out there. He's coming.
So that wasp is like looking at you, he's going,
yeah.
You thought you were going to flush me down the toilet?
Do you know who I am?
So that's what happened.
Acknowledge me.
So that is what happened.
Derek Mason breaking stereotypes because, as we know, what happens usually at the beginning of horror movies.
Yes, the black guys die. That's just what happens. It happens. I'm not going to lie, people. Don't be so sensitive. That is what happens. Everybody knows it. Two people die first. Everybody knows who those two people are.
The hot girl and the black guy?
Exactly.
Okay.
Not in that order. Could be the black guy, then the hot girl. Could be the hot girl. Then it could be both of them at the same time. Who knows?
Yes.
But that's who's going to be gone first.
Now, how many eyes does a wasp have?
Well, he had enough to see me. No, he had two.
Chad says.
I think they have two, right?
Yeah, they have two.
Spiders have the lot of eyes, right?
Chad says. Yeah. So it's a toilet wasp? That's worse than a regular wasp.
It's a waterbender of wasp.
Exactly.
One texter says, was Ant-Man with the wasp? I don't know.
This isn't the sequel.
John says, wasps remember faces, FYI.
Ooh.
So you better watch your back, Derek Mason.
Yeah, I'm walking out of here very slowly.
One texter says,
thing is,
they smell fear.
Yeah.
I think we're giving too much credit to the wasp.
Hey.
But.
Never underestimate a wasp.
There's only one way out of this place, too.
Mm-hmm.
From this studio. We got to go through these two doors. He could be waiting right there.
Derek will be the first
one to leave. I was going to say, Derek, lead the way.
Yeah, Derek, we volunteer you to go out first.
He's hiding behind the trash can.
Now, we have some people defending the wasp.
Oh, my Lord.
Jeff
okay.
says, so you didn't want to crush the wasp, but you flushing it down the toilet was okay.
Haven't you seen the movies? What happens? The bug get flushed. He doesn't die.
Yeah.
He just goes into another, another house.
You're giving him
or
a
something.
Chance. You're
exactly.
giving him a chance.
I'm
if
giving
you
him
can
a chance.
Survive the flush, you deserve to live.
Yes,
you'll be
absolutely.
Out of our area, though.
I mean, there was a time, maybe it was around the time that Snakes on a Plane was in theaters, where I was always a bit fearful using the restroom going a certain number because I didn't want a snake to come through the pipe.
I think a lot of people had that fear, especially when you're using public restrooms. Yeah.
Chad says that wasp had that dog in him. Hey,
he's fighting.
Hey,
fighting to survive. How in the world did he get in the studio? That's what I still.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, goodness,
it's not a big place.
He was trying to figure that out too.
There's no windows. How did he get in?
Yeah, no open.
I mean,
windows.
We have a window that doesn't open. It's like plexiglass, right? How did he get in there?
I don't know. There you go.
We'll
he found a way.
We'll never know.
It's a mystery.
But Derek has survived for now. Check back later in the program if Derek goes eerily silent. The wasp got him.
Or comes in with his head swollen up twice the size.
Looking like Hitch. Looking like Will Smith on Hitch.
Oh, man. Okay. Back to sports. I stumbled across this list written last summer, ranking the top 10 seasons by a wide receiver with a rookie quarterback under center. These wideouts thrived with their new passers. Now, again, this was written last summer, so it does not include Jaden Daniels or Bo Nix or Caleb Williams or Drake May and their top receivers. But guess who appears at number 8 on this list? Derek Mason with Joe Flacco in 2008, 1,005 receiving yards. So it's ranked by receiving yards. So quickly, here's the top 10 as of last summer. From 10 to 1, Vincent Jackson with Mike Glennon in 2013 with the Buccaneers.
Mike Glennon. Yes. Mike Glennon was defeated by the Vanderbilt Commodores in the Music City Bowl when he was at NC State, by the way. Just a sidebar.
A.J. Green with Andy Dalton with the Bengals in 2011. Derek Mason with Joe Flacco with the Ravens in 2008, 1,005 yards. Isaac Bruce with Tony Banks with the 1996 Rams. Brian Hartline with Ryan Tannehill for the 2012 Miami Dolphins. The top five, Mike Evans with Jameis Winston in 2015. Nico Collins with C.J. Stroud in 2023.
Okay.
Reggie Wayne with Andrew Luck in 2012. Roddy White with Matt Ryan in 2008. And number one, with 1,394 receiving yards, Steve Smith with Cam Newton in 2011. Now, updating this list, Derek Mason, you're still on the list.
Mm-hmm.
You're number 10.
Yes.
Because last season, Terry McLaurin had 1,096 receiving yards with Jaden Daniels, and Cortland Sutton had 1,081 receiving yards for the Broncos with Bo Nix. By the way, DJ Moore with Caleb Williams, 966 yards. And a wide receiver was not Drake May's number one target in New England. Hunter Henry had 674 receiving yards. The top wide receiver, Demario Douglas, with 621 receiving yards to lead all Patriots wide receivers. So the reason I bring this up is, how should we tailor expectations for Calvin Ridley with Cam Ward throwing him the ball based on those numbers? So there have been plenty of 1,000-yard receiving seasons from a wideout with a rookie quarterback. Number one, Steve Smith with Cam Newton in 2011, 79 receptions, 1,394 yards, and 7 touchdowns. So should we set the baseline at 1,000 yards for Calvin Ridley? How should we make these expectations for Ridley based on history of veteran wideouts with rookie quarterbacks?
I think you got to first look at, you know, the personnel around, what type of team they are philosophically, offensively. You know, Brian Callahan wants to throw the football a little bit more than what they have. But with the rookie quarterback, you do it in phases. You kind of bring them along slowly. But if you look at it, he's your number one option. And when he's your number one option, everything is going to run from the passing, from a passing standpoint. Everything should run through that number one option. You want your quarterback to get familiar with your number one guy as soon as possible. And a lot of it is repetition, you know, being in the film room together, watching film together, you knowing him as a player, him knowing you, and even further than that. And then, you know, you hope that what you've built through practice and everything else, once you get on the field, you know, it translate. So I think a lot of it has to do, again, I think Ridley should be 1,100 guy at least, 1,100 yards at least, 6 touchdowns at least. He's the number one guy. Those should be your numbers, even with the rookie quarterback. But a lot of it's going to depend on, because he can be, there's being productive, And there's running up a bunch of numbers. Running up a bunch of numbers means we're down by 20 points, 17 points. You got to throw the football. So you're going to accumulate numbers. You're going to get the stats. But the stats aren't helping you win games. We did it the other way in Baltimore. We didn't throw the ball a lot, but we were we tried to be as efficient as possible with the football. and throwing it because we knew that we couldn't, Joe couldn't drop back. Now, eventually he became that guy, but his rookie year, he couldn't drop back and throw the ball 35 times or even 30 times a game and us expect to win ball games.
What's interesting is the year before Flacco arrived, you had 103 catches for 1,087 yards. In Flacco's rookie season, you caught 23 fewer passes, but you only had 50 fewer receiving yards. You went from 1,087 to 1,037.
It was about efficiency.
Yes, your yard per reception went up from 10.6 to 13.
Yeah, it was about being efficient with the younger quarterback. Now, that previous year, I think we went through about two or three quarterbacks that previous year.
Would that have been Kyle Bowler?
Kyle Bowler, Steve was hurt. I think we even went with Wright. His last name was Wright. Anthony Wright, he may have been on the team as well, and he may have played a little bit quarterback as well. But it's about with a rookie quarterback, it's not necessarily about throwing the ball a lot. It's just about being efficient. And if you are efficient in what you're doing, the numbers will come because a lot of it, we did a lot of play action. We had two very good running backs. Our offensive line was good. We did a lot of it out of play action because that was Joe's strength, getting to pushing the ball down the field. They're going to have to find out what Cam Ward's strength is and how it works well with Calvin Ridley. Again, he should be the guy that is getting the bulk of the work unless he proves otherwise, unless other guys start to come on. But to start off, they need to build that rapport as quickly as possible with your number one guy in your franchise quarterback. Because if you don't, I think Cam is going to have a hard time, at least at the beginning, at pushing the ball down the field.
So here are, Willie, Terry McLaurin's numbers from last season with Jaden Daniels as his quarterback. 82 receptions, 1,096 yards, so an average of 13.4, with 13 touchdowns. Now, we're not expecting 13 touchdowns from Calvin Ridley.
I would love it.
But 80-ish receptions, roughly 1,100 yards, Derek and Willie. Well, Derek, and then we'll get Willie's thoughts. Do you think that should be the baseline expectation for Calvin Ridley?
Yeah, I think it's doable.
80-ish receptions, roughly 1,100 yards.
The 80 might – okay, in today's football, yes. How many did he have last year? 70
Ridley?
Yeah.
Let's take a look.
I think he had 70-something receptions. He may have had 80. But
Ridley had 64 receptions on 120 targets, 1,017 yards, and four touchdowns.
So he needs to be, I think, 75, 80 catches, over 1,100 yards. I think based on the pay, based on him being the number one guy in the offense that wants to pass the football, he should be an 80-catch guy, 1,100 yards, and I give him 6 or 7. He had 6 touchdowns last year, didn't he?
He had 4.
4?
He had 2. He may have had 2, like, rushing touchdowns. Uh-huh. He had 1 rushing touchdown and 4 receiving touchdowns.
Okay, so he had a total of 5. Listen, he should be a 6 to 7 touchdown guy. He should be. He has the ability to, at minimum, do that.
A lot of the people on this list, and Derek would be one of them, played on a team that was a good team. Like, you guys obviously were a good mm-hmm. team. You guys went and beat the Titans, the number one seed in the playoffs that year, and played the Steelers nip and tuck. That was a tough, tough game. Like, that game could have gone either way. This Titans team is not going to be like that. I don't think Terry McLaurin and the Washington. Now, I don't think we had high expectations for that team going in, but as we know, that team turned out to be a good team.
No, I can't remember the records of all of these teams.
Yeah.
I don't recall, for example, the 2015 Buccaneers with Jameis Winston and Mike Evans.
No, they were terrible.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's possible with a terrible team. By the way, Mike Evans.
Now, maybe not terrible, but not good. Like, not a playoff team.
Mike Evans had 74 receptions for 1,206 yards and 3 touchdowns with Jameis Winston in his rookie season.
So I wonder about that part of it, because part of where you can get yards is, I think this was the case with Winston and Evans, is you're behind mm-hmm. and you get a lot of, you might get some padded stats in some
and
fourth quarters.
Yeah.
And I think there were probably some games last year that Ridley got some yards that way. Ridley had some games where he was non-existent mm-hmm. for a while. He had some very good games. And then he had some games where he probably got a few catches late. Every receiver might get a few like that.
namely the game against the Lions, which, by the way, was 52-14. He had 10 receptions for 143 yards.
And in fairness, in the first half, when they started going well, they were playing awful in other areas, but he played really well in that game. I don't want to take anything away from what he did.
A lot of that was
in the first half.
Yeah. He had too many games where, and you just said it, where he disappeared. He had too many games where, and I'm not saying it was his fault. I don't know whose fault it was, but when you are the number one guy, you can't just disappear, especially, I guess it would be his fault because I forget what game that was. I think he dropped like 2 or 3 balls.
Well, there was the infamous game against the Colts early in the season where he had 0 receptions on 8 targets.
Exactly.
Talked about it after the game.
Yeah. So that can't be his stat line moving forward with the young quarterback or rookie quarterback. That cannot be his stat line. He has to be helping that rookie quarterback because if he's not, then somebody else needs to pick up the slack. But if you're the number one guy, you can't just, disappear like you did, last year at points in the season. And again, I'm not blaming it all on him, but when you're that guy, you have to elevate your quarterback in some situations. And he did with Will Levis at times.
In the first 6 games of the season, Ridley had 12 receptions for 183 yards. Then in the game against the Lions, he had 10 receptions for 143 yards. So he basically had his first 6 weeks of the season in one game against the Lions.
Yeah, I think after 6 weeks, I think there were a lot of people that probably would not have bet on him getting to 1,000 yards. So he did reasonably well to recover and have numbers at the end of the season that were at least respectable.
Mm-hmm. But that was his only 100-yard receiving game of the season.
But that's the Titans. That is, I blame that whole experiment on the Titans. I just do. They should have known beforehand when they brought Ridley in that this thing with D-Hop, I said it, it's not going to work.
You think the D-Hop thing will help Ridley a lot?
I think it hurt him because they were still trying to run the offense somewhat through D-Hop. And running the offense through D-Hop, as I said that at the beginning of last year, it's not going to get your offense anywhere. It's not. Can he catch the ball? Yes. Is he going to be a Hall of Famer, I believe? Yes. But in today's game, he can't be that guy for you because if he's that guy, your offense is going to be a slow offense. And it wasn't until he departed, they traded him away, Calvin Ridley started to, show himself more in games. So I blame that on the Titans because that was a failed experiment.
And you're not going to have that issue this season because Tyler Lockett and Van Jefferson and the rookie wide receivers are not going to threaten Calvin Ridley for that alpha dog status right out of the gate.
But it's hard for what people don't understand is that it's hard for an individual to come in than to already be there. Like this year, it'd be better for Calvin Ridley now because he's here now. He knows the offense. He's picking up on tendencies and stuff. So this year should be now it's Jefferson and Tyler Lockett. Those are going to be the guys that may not benefit this year. Maybe next year they benefit, but I'm not sure if they're going to benefit a lot this year because why? They're still learning offense.
615-737-1025. Your expectations. An interesting list of the top veteran wide receivers and their output playing with rookie quarterbacks. So your baseline expectations for Calvin Ridley in his first season with Cam Ward. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, there's some collusion in the air. I can smell it. And I know Willie Donick has a lot of thoughts on this. So we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Tune into ESPN 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Durham Bulls. Pre-game begins at 5:20. First pitch is at 5:35. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025, 1063. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. So you may recall a couple of weeks ago, a story came out courtesy of Pablo Torre and Mike Florio about potential collusion among NFL owners in the wake of Deshaun Watson's fully guaranteed contract with the Cleveland Browns. And there has been some additional reporting from ESPN. Don Van Natta Jr. and Kalen Kaler co-bylined this story. Quote, the NFL and senior leaders of the NFL Players Association struck an unusual confidentiality agreement that hid the details of an arbitration decision from players, including a finding that league executives had urged team owners to reduce guaranteed player compensation, multiple sources told ESPN. On January 14th, arbitrator Christopher Droney ruled there wasn't sufficient evidence of collusion by owners in contract negotiations with quarterbacks after the record fully guaranteed contract by quarterback Deshaun Watson in 2022. Any such collusion to keep salaries down would violate the CBA between the NFL and the union. But Droney concluded that the NFLPA showed, quote, by a clear preponderance of the evidence, that Commissioner Roger Goodell and the league's general counsel Jeff Pash had urged owners to restrict guaranteed money in player contracts. So according to ESPN, the NFL and senior leaders of the NFLPA struck an unusual agreement that hid the details of this decision from players. Willie, I know you're a little bit fired up about this.
Well, I'm baffled that this isn't a bigger story. I know it is a little hard to follow on the surface, but the basics of it are this. And I find this interesting because I have studied baseball history, and I know how the owners, they got defeated. They were brought down by a strong players association through A, being unified, B, having good leadership, and attacking and also making public the strifes of the players, you know, the rights of the players, and trying to advance when there was no free agency. Like, I'm going back, I'm not saying in recent times, because the pendulum has swung a lot towards baseball. You don't hear baseball players crying foul a whole lot right now. They're taken care of pretty well. There was a day where that was not the case. But in the 1980s, the league colluded and told the owners, the commissioner at the time, Peter Ueberroth, basically told the owners, hey, you guys are playing way too much for free agents. You're paying stupid money. Stop doing it. And they came up with a system, more or less, that would not go after even the top free agents for a 2 or 3 year period. Tim Raines, Andre Dawson, Jack Morris, like some of the best players of that decade. It was baffling at the time. People didn't want to believe it. Years later, after they stayed after it, baseball had to pay the players hundreds of millions of dollars. All of the free agents, whether they were good or not, got compensated. This, to me, is very similar. After the Deshaun Watson contract, where he got a guaranteed contract, and the rest of the owners were like, what did you just do, Cleveland Browns? What just happened? Because it was an unprecedented contract. What happened? After that, Roger Goodell goes to the owners and says, hey, not a good idea. Don't do that again. Let's not open up Pandora's box and set a precedent here. And that's exactly what they did. They banded together. They colluded, which is against the CBA. And the players' union goes and files a grievance. At the time, the leader of the Players Association, Demoris Smith, was the one carrying the torch. Mm-hmm. This decision comes down in January. It took 3 years to get the findings of this. And as you just mentioned, the arbiter basically said, look, there's not enough evidence to nail the guys for collusion. But let me just tell you a few things here. It really does look like there was a motion here to say no guaranteed contracts for Lamar Jackson and other quarterbacks that would have benefited from the precedent set from Deshaun Watson, right? I mean, an idiot could interpret that. But here's the thing that really gets me. The current leader, his name is Powell.
Lloyd Howell Jr. Yes.
He decides, hey, let's sign a confidentiality agreement so that I don't even tell the players what was said by the arbiter. Now, why in the world would you do that? You represent the players. So he signs an agreement not to tell the players what the arbiter said, which was very incriminating for the owners, where you have in emails and texts a conversation between the lead attorney for the owners and the commissioner saying, hey, this is not a good idea, this guaranteed money stuff, man. Let's tell everybody, don't do this. That's collusion. You think as a player, Derek, mm-hmm. you might have wanted to know that?
Oh, I would have wanted to know that.
Of course you would have. This is your representative. This is your guy. But he goes to the players and says, that was the old guy. That was Demora Smith. You know, you guys wasted a lot of time and energy and money doing something. You don't need to know. But imagine you have a case where Adam goes and, you know, he's arguing about, I don't know, let's just pick it's a dispute, the People's Court or something. And you send an attorney in there to hear your case. But you can't go in there. But the attorney comes out and you say, and Adam says, hey, Mr. Smith, my attorney, how did it go? Well, we lost. Oh, what did the judge say? I can't tell you. Imagine that.
You'd be peeved. Baffled.
Where is it? So what is going on with the union here? Who is this leader?
I am not going to blame the players, like the other player reps, because obviously they didn't get the information. To me, the ball was started. They started with DeMaurice in 2022 because there was something there. So they started the case. And then all of a sudden, 3 years later, you have someone else comes in and say, never mind. Let's talk behind closed doors and let's you know, get this agreement together. And whatever was said, it can't be discussed with any of the other 32, or it's a little bit more than that, player reps. But we can discuss it with maybe the lawyers, but we can't discuss it or we won't discuss it with the players. And then you go into the room with the players, and as you said, well, we lost. Well, what's going on? Well, we signed this agreement. We can't talk about it. My next thing would have been, well, you're fired. We need to fire you because if you can't tell us about a case that involves us, something's wrong here. And this is why, and again, I don't blame the players, but this is why when we talk about unions and I try to take up for the union, this is why they believe in major sports that the NFL has the weakest union. This why, because you're colluding. You're an op. That the young kids call them ops. You're an op. And it's in plain day. You should be gone. They should vote your ass off today. If we were on an island, you would be off.
Yeah.
There's no way that you are my representative. You speak for us. But then you go and you make a backroom deal that you can't tell us about.
It looks like they're in the owner's hip pocket.
They are.
That's what it looks like.
He is. Yeah. I'm not saying the players are, but he is.
Yes.
Obviously.
According to ESPN, Lloyd Howell Jr. is working as a paid part-time consultant for the Carlyle Group, one of a select group of league-approved private equity firms now seeking minority ownership in NFL franchises.
So that's a conflict of interest. He's making money. He made over $3 million for a cause that's in cahoots with NFL owners.
Why did they even hide?
ESPN reported.
How could that possibly be?
That Howell briefed the players on the decision, but did not detail the findings or provide copies. The confidentiality agreement kept the details of Droney's finding from the players until the Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast published the full arbitrator's report on June 24th.
So that piece of information that Goodell and Pash, the correspondence back and forth that's been documented, the players in the league who are represented, but they found out from Pablo Torre that happened and not from their leadership.
When DeMaurice was leading the players' union, especially during, now I didn't like everything. I didn't agree with everything. I wanted more, like there were a group of us that wanted more, but they settled and it is what it is. But he made sure, and that group made sure, that we had everything that we needed to have in order to make educational decision, intelligent decision based upon, you know, the new collective bargaining. DeMaurice didn't come in and say, hey, listen, this is what we, you know, this is what we decided. We're going to do this, but we're not going to give y'all any information. No, he gave us information. Sometimes it was too much information. I don't understand why you would go into a room on a telephone or face-to-face and make a backhanded deal like that, and you're representing, you know, how many players are there? 1,700 players. Why would you make a deal like that? And why isn't it a – why isn't someone with a bullhorn screaming like, this isn't right? I don't understand it. This is why – and again, it's not the players' fault. It's those that are tasked to not only be player reps but to be on that committee. Like, there's only so many guys on that committee. This is why they believe that the NFL has the weakest union, because of stuff like this. Baseball didn't do it.
Right. Baseball owners
They tried, they did it, but then they got penalized for
it. Right. When they had the breakthrough leader of the Players Association was Marvin Miller, and he was a royal pain in the you-know-what to the owners, to the point where once they started getting traction, the owners started to fear Marvin Miller. And then his successor, Donald Fear. That's what you need as a player, a bulldog, where the owners are sitting there going, man, we'd like to sweep this under the rug, but we know that they're not going to let that happen. They've never had that for the NFL union. Going back to Gene Upshaw and then Demoris Smith, it's always the owners have never really feared the Players Association.
What they did when Gene Upshaw was player, when he was head of player reps, they didn't like Gene Upshaw because he was a former player and he was trying to push for players to get paid more than everything else. He was at the forefront and all that, and they didn't like him. That was probably the last person.
Yeah.
He was certainly better than
the last two guys, but I don't understand how think about what the owners decided to do, and the commissioner's part of this too. You get them to sign a confidentiality agreement. First of all, how did they think they were going to keep this secret? This is huge, damaging information. But they're like, oh, nobody will find out. We have a confidentiality. So thank goodness for a journalist like Pablo Torres.
But again,
what
is anybody going to do about it? Because it's not like we just found this out today. They knew about it. The story came out 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And they still haven't talked about it.
Oh, now they're going to appeal the ruling. Like, what's going on in the last 6 months when they knew all this? Because you know why? The players didn't know all this stuff. And now the players, I'm sure, rightfully so, are going back and going, wait a minute. Look at this.
Because it hurts them. It hurts them.
Yes.
615-737-1025. I smell collusion. 615-737-1025. It's a pungent aroma. Like, what was that perfume in Anchorman? Sex Panther?
Sex Panther. 60% of the time?
It works every time.
Exactly. Collusion and Sex Panther have roughly the same aroma.
But can I make one more point of this, though?
Sure.
What is your best ally when you've got somebody dead to right for that? It's the media. Mm-hmm. They could have driven this as a Players Association going, look what they did. And you might get some public support. Right now, on a show like ours, there's people confused. They don't know anything about this because they successfully kept this under wraps for a long time. But you've got the partners kind of in the bag, the media partners. ESPN's not going to be stopping everything they're doing to say, look at this, the players got cheated. Mm-hmm. Like, think about landmark cases in the past that opened the door for free agency and other things that, until that happened, it was very, very different. This could have been a precedent-setting contract for Watson to where the best quarterbacks in the league, at least the quarterbacks, and then maybe other players would follow suit, would start to get either more guaranteed money or fully guaranteed contracts. But they put a stop to it because why? They colluded, and they've been able to keep it a secret.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on that. I also want you to ponder this question as we go to break. How much would you pay to stay at Michael Jordan's house? Because I have an answer for you. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinge, 1025-1063, The Game. D. Mace, Vingen, and Darnick, 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinge here with you. Stillman & Company featuring Jake Lyman, Connor Newton, and Parker Kelly coming up next. By the way, we do have a quote-unquote homework assignment for you, as Willie discussed the other day. Tomorrow, we are going to take a look back at a game that Willie chose, 1986, week three of the NFL season between the Miami Dolphins and New York Jets. You can find that game on YouTube. We've also tweeted it out at our @1025thegame account. So if you want to play along with us tomorrow, you can watch the game, as much of it as you'd like, and we are going to analyze it and how much the game has changed on a variety of factors over the past 40 years, not just on the field, but the broadcast, the commercials, all of those things. So if you want to do this with us, we're going to do it in the 1 o'clock hour tomorrow. The link has been tweeted out at 1025 the game. So that'll be right in the 1 o'clock hour tomorrow.
And watch as much or as little of it as you like. But I think you would enjoy the participation even if you just watched a 10-minute segment. But you can skip around. It is a great ending to a great game. I watched it as a kid. But we're going to make observations. What jumps out at you when you watch an old game 40 years ago from an X's and O's standpoint, equipment, pop culture, the broadcast? So we're going to have some fun tomorrow.
So I want to end the show on this. Mm-hmm. How much would you pay to spend a week at Michael Jordan's former mansion in the suburbs of Chicago?
Same amount I would spend in a hotel, I guess. I get the whole house.
You get the whole house.
I'm surprised you even said that. Yeah, I thought you were going to go Al Pacino and The Godfather. Here's my offer.
Yeah, it's nothing. If I get to stay in his house, what would be the going rate for a nice hotel there in Chicago?
A lot.
Probably about $1,000 a night. So yeah, I would.
So but wouldn't you rather be 800 in the middle of Chicago and the
where
you can walk around to all the good stuff?
Yeah, you're right about that.
So where is this? You're not near anything, right? You're going to stumble out to a nice restaurant.
His former Illinois mansion, which is located in Highland Park, Illinois, is now available on Airbnb.
Mm.
It was purchased by real estate investor John Cooper, not the Tampa Bay Lightning coach. Mm-hmm. He bought the house for $9.5 million, and now it is available on Airbnb. The mansion sits on 7.39 acres, 7 bedrooms, 17 and a half bathrooms, a movie theater, gym, cigar lounge, pool tables, and saltwater aquariums. The property also features a swimming pool, a fishing pond stocked with bass and bluegill, a putting green, and of course, a basketball court. Anyone renting the mansion must sign a non-disclosure agreement and liability waiver and pay a $25,000 security deposit and cannot host parties or events on the property. A maximum of 12 guests can stay in the house, no pets. A minimum 7-night reservation is required, making the price of a stay in Jordan's old house $120,920 per week.
Nah. I pass. Yeah. I pass on that one.
It's not something I would splurge on. We had the discussion yesterday of, what you might be enticed to actually splurge on.
Mm-hmm.
This would not be on my radar.
Nah.
It would not. I'd rather splurge for the nice hotel in the middle of downtown.
Absolutely walkable.
Where I could hop on the subway, or the L, as they call it in Chicago, and go to Wrigley or go to a nice restaurant.
But if you split it with your friends, if you find 11 friends.
Still spending $20,000.
$10,076.
Well, $10,000. That's still too much.
A splurge.
Well, you know what? Some hotels you end up paying, if you go on a trip, you end up paying probably a little bit close to that. But that's because you got the ocean and you got other things you can do and you're going as a family, yada, yada, yada. I just can't. Paying that much, I need to be near things that I can just walk out.
Exactly.
And just walk down the street to. And I don't have to get in my car and travel. Because I'm sure that, what is it, Highlands? I'm sure it's at least
Highland Park, Illinois.
20 minutes, 20, 25 minutes from downtown.
Yeah. And you got to get a car. Where are you going to park when you go downtown? Unless you're sitting there going, we're just going to stay in Michael Jordan's place.
I think that's what you would do.
Time.
Yeah. You would stay at the mansion for the whole week.
Wouldn't you get bored?
Exactly.
I don't know. He's got a basketball court and a fishing pond and a swimming pool.
A fishing pond?
Yes, I said that.
Hotel has a basketball court.
So like Caddyshack, we got a pool and a pond.
It's got a pool and a pond and a cigar lounge. You don't have to leave, but this actually reminds me of another story I saw yesterday. This is just a funny lead from NBC News. A New York City co-op board rejected influencer Livy Dunn's bid to buy Babe Ruth's one-time apartment, turning aside her nearly $1.6 million offer of cash. So Livy Dunn, who is the LSU gymnast,
right,
who is dating
influencer
Paul Skeens, they were going to pay $1.6-ish million in cash to buy Babe Ruth's one-time apartment, but the co-op board of the building rejected her.
Put the kibosh on that one. We don't want, we like it quiet around here.
She said, and I quote,
influencer stuff around here.
She said, and I quote, I got an interior designer because I didn't want to bring my college furniture to Babe Ruth's apartment. That would be like criminal, quote, end quote.
I guess they started too much fuss once they got up in there. See, you started going on Instagram and telling, no. If you're going to do it quietly. Do it quietly.
She accepted the ruling with good spirit. I watched this TikTok. Mm-hmm. Probably the first time I've watched a Livy Dunn TikTok, which may make me an outlier among men my age. But she seemed to be a good sport about it.
She never said why the co-op denied her. Because there have been other famous people that have been denied as well.
She said, it could have been, for all I know, they could have been Alabama fans and I went to LSU. Like, I have no clue. Maybe they didn't want a public figure living there. Something tells me that none of the people living in this New York City co-op are Alabama fans. I'm just
saying.
What's
the probability? Low.
No, very, very low. Yes, yes. I think it had more so to do with, sort of the attention she would bring to the building.
Probably.
Yeah. So they didn't want it. Maybe Paul Skeens should have went and tried to get it. They probably would have said no to him too.
Maybe. But you know what? Good on her for trying.
Hey,
I guess.
But those are first world problems right there.
Yes.
Those
this
right
is
there
exactly
are
right.
First world problems. And somebody, if you felt bad for her, shame on you. If you feel, I'm not talking about you, Adam, but if anybody felt bad for her, shame on y'all. Those are first world problems.
I'm sure Jake Lyman and Connor Newton and Parker Kelly are big Livy Dunn fans. They are right in her demographic.
Say that again? Contemporaries.
Yeah.
I said that I think Jake Lyman, Connor Newton, and Parker Kelly are absolutely Livy Dunn fans because they are right in her demographic. Teenage boys.
Are y'all guys Livy Dunn fans?
They're all 17 and a half.
Connor, hold on. Let's be real with Connor. Connor's 12.
Okay.
He hasn't graduated high school yet. Or middle school yet.
Yeah, so that's the teen crew. We call them the teen crew.
Mm-hmm.
What were they called? The Mickey Mouse Club?
The Mickey Mouse Club.
They're going to be the teen group. The teen crew.
Except the Mickey Mouse Club launched the careers of Justin Timberlake and
Britney Spears.
Britney Spears and
among others.
Was Jamie Spears a part of that? She must have been a little bit younger. She probably wasn't a part of the Mickey Mouse.
Y'all don't follow Rick Mayer because he just said that all three of these guys were the future of Nashville sports radio.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Well, cool. I mean, Rick Mayer
said that. If Rick Mayer said it, then that means it's true.
Hey,
Ryan Gosling
are.
Was a part of the Mickey Mouse
was
Club.
He?
Yeah, Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, that's right. I remember Christina Aguilera.
So I think you're pushing it with the Mickey Mouse Club thing.
Yeah.
No offense to Jake and Connor. And
if you're going to insult me, at least get it right. It's the Mouseketeers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, our fault.
Connor, you better be nice to me. I'm taking you to Friday Night SmackDown tomorrow.
Ooh.
So
hey.
Don't make me cancel that ticket I transferred.
If you
want to
get picked up, then chill out.
That's all I'm saying.
Buy me a beer. It'll be all right.
Are you old enough for a beer?
Yes.
Okay.
We need to card you, buddy.
He was doing the hand quotes while he said that. Yes.
Yes. We know what that means.
He is in college still, so I mean.
We know what that means.
So nobody out there would take a shot with 11 of your buddies to spend a week at Michael Jordan's mansion
right.
in suburban Chicago.
No.
Now, if you had disposable income, some disposable income, then yeah, I mean, it would be one of those.
You could tell me Michael would be there hanging out with you, and I still wouldn't really bite. I wouldn't bite.
No, I think I may want, yeah. If I got 10 other Michael friends made that would pay that.
If Michael made an appearance as part of the fee,
I think I would do
it. I wouldn't do it.
I would do it. I think I would. I would. If I had 10 other buddies that said they're going to pay, you know, their portion, and Michael's going to be there to have some drinks with us, chill, tell us stories, I'm taking it.
Okay.
I'm taking it.
Well, that'll do it for us today. We'll see if Derek survives leaving the station. That wasp is lurking somewhere.
He's hiding.
We'll see if Derek shows up tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Cliffhanger. Will Derek make it back to the show? Will he survive this mutant wasp that popped out of the toilet?
And was assaulted on the air with the loudest noise that's been made. I thought Derek might punch through the plexiglass. It was close.
Oh, man.
We'll find out all of you.
Tomorrow there will be an instant replay of that moment because that was awesome. We need to capture that forever.
Okay. That'll do it for us. The Mouseketeers, Jake and Connor and Parker, they're coming up next.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Thursday, and watch out for wasps, all right? Make that the word today. Watch out for wasps. I love you. See you. Peace.